The views and opinions expressed on this show are those of the sponsor, Gross & Schuster.
News Radio Pensacola. It's the Pensacola Expert Panel. I'm your host, Jake Walker. Thank you so much for joining me. This is a call or text-in show. You can always join the conversation. That number is 850-437-1620. My next guest is an injury attorney here in our community doing great work. His sons work for him over at Gross & Schuster. Check them out online, grossandschuster.com. Their number, 850-434-3333. Mr. Gross, how are you doing this beautiful morning?
Doing good. Got a bit of a cold, Jake, so if I cough every now and then, I apologize.
That's
hard to hit a cough button when we're doing it remotely. But anyway, you know, I always come at the topic. I am a personal injury lawyer, and I remember about 15 years ago, I was on another radio show, and we were talking about tort reform and all lawsuits and all that, and one guy called in. You could tell he was anti-lawsuit, anti-lawyer, and he goes, "We need the loser's pay rule. That would limit all these lawsuits." And I laughed. I said, "Sir, we've had the loser's pay rule since 1986 in Florida." He goes, "Oh, no, you don't." I said, "Are you a lawyer?" And he goes, "No, but I read a lot." And I said, "Well, you better read this statute." I started citing some statutes. I said, "Then you just don't know what you're talking about." I mean, it'd be like me trying to argue with a spinal surgeon about the spine or something.
Right.
But anyway, we've had this law, and so laymen call it the loser's pay rule. Lawyers don't call it that. Lawyers call it the proposal for settlement law. And it only comes into play, Jake, when a lawsuit is filed. And then after it's filed, either side can file a formal written offer, and if that offer is not accepted in 30 days, and if the plaintiff files it, if the plaintiff gets 25% more than the offer, so say I want $100,000 and I get 25% more than that from a jury, then they have to pay my attorney's fees and costs, which could be six figures. Mm. Meanwhile, and let's say they file one for $40,000. So they think the case worth $40,000, I think it's worth $100,000. And you know, for them to win at the $40,000, they'd have to get a judgment that is 25% less or less than $30,000. And if they did that, then my client, who did not cause the wreck, could still go away owing the insurance company their attorney's fees and costs. So if the jury says $25,000 and you've got a formal proposal for $40,000, well, their defense costs are going to be way more than $25,000. So this guy may end up owing the insurance company $50,000 or more.
Wow.
So it's a two-edged sword. Now, when they passed it, Jake, they're always trying, you know, it's really at the bequest of the insurance companies. Their lobby is tremendous in Tallahassee. So all these laws that we hear about are always pushed through by the legislature at the will of the insurance companies who lobby and so forth. Well, I guess they were thinking, oh, all these lawyers file frivolous lawsuits, they're going to lose, and we're going to owe. But they didn't think about the two-edged sword nature of this proposal, because you take someone like me that's pretty reasonable, and I'm always willing to take a bird in the hand. Settlements are never a home run. I always tell my clients, the only home run you get is in the courtroom. Mm. You may get a single, you may get a double, sometimes a triple in a settlement, but more often than not, you know, a double's a good result. I mean, any batter in baseball would love to get a double.
Right.
I mean, of course, everybody likes the home run, but that's only if you go to the plate, which means if you go to trial, and so forth. Well, the reason I gave you that $100,000, $40,000 scenario, that's a real case I had. So about 15 years ago, I had this case. It was in Santa Rosa County, and my guy had been rear-ended. By all things, he was a sheriff's deputy off duty, rear-ended by an ambulance. And now the ambulance was not in an emergency situation. It was just a regular day, and the ambulance was going from A to B, no lights on, no emergency or anything like that. But it was stop-and-go traffic, and The ambulance just didn't stop. My guy was driving a Jeep, not much damage to his Jeep. So you looked at the rear of his Jeep, didn't look like a big deal. But the front of the ambulance was smashed in pretty good. My guy has neck pain. He sees a chiropractor. He gets an MRI. The MRI says herniated disc. He ends up seeing a surgeon. And the surgeon says, son, the only way to fix this is surgery. Well, my guy was in his late 30s. He was a single dad, had a seven-year-old son at the time. And he had no support. He didn't have any family in town. He was raising this kid all by himself. And, you know, he did not have the luxury of taking off 3 or 4 weeks and having some kid to take care of the kid. So he just couldn't have the surgery. And that was the case. So there was no surgery, so his medical bills weren't that great. But the fact that, that we had a surgical recommendation, I wanted $100,000. Well, they only offered $40,000. So we go to trial. So just before trial, the insurance company retains this expert. He's like a biomechanical engineer type expert. And his testimony was to say that even though the ambulance looked smashed in, it really wasn't that bad because most of the ambulance fronts were made of plastic and it really wasn't that big an impact. And how do we know that he was even herniated the disc in the accident and he hadn't had surgery? You know, it's that, that was the argument. So it goes to trial, and this expert, I'd never heard of him before, so like a competent lawyer. I got a lot of his prior depositions throughout the state. There's all these lawyers I, you know, list of them. And I got about 15 depositions from lawyers from here to Miami who had taken this guy's deposition. And I saw a common thing that all these lawyers who were probably smart tried to argue with him about physics and all kinds of G-forces and whatever. And he would just beat him down. He was just too good. I mean, this was his he was an expert. So I figured I'm not smart enough to do that. But I took his deposition. He was retained 60 days for trial. At his deposition, he did come out and say forthrightly that I finally badgered him enough, and he finally admitted that he'd already been paid $10,000 to review the case and come up with his opinion. And then I said, well, didn't you make me pay you for your deposition today? He goes, yes, $2,000. And how much do you charge per hour? $400 an hour. So he drove to court. By and large, by the time after he testified, he was good.
Right.
All I did was ask him about how much money he'd been paid. And the jury heard that he'd been paid $20,000. So I asked one question. So this picture of this ambulance here, you've been paid $20,000 to tell this jury this wasn't a real impact. And the jury got it. They were sort of smiling at my cross-examination. And we ended up winning. We got a $250,000 verdict.
Wow.
So $250,000 is obviously more than 25% more than $100,000. So I would have settled for $100,000. But because we got more, they had to pay attorney's fees and costs. My costs to go to trial at that time were $17,000. They had to reimburse me for that. And they paid me $100,000 on top of that. So we actually walked away with $367,000. The jury said $250,000, but we got $367,000.
Wow.
So I think the insurance companies kind of outthought themselves in this law. They just thought, oh, we're going to slam all these plaintiffs because there are all these frivolous lawsuits. Well, folks, there's real injury cases out there and so forth, and not everybody's faking, not everybody's malingering. The vast majority, the people I see are truly injured. Their injuries may be invisible. Like this guy, he looked normal, but the MRI can't lie. The MRI showed a herniated disc, and the surgeon said he absolutely needed surgery. So that's just an example. But because of the loser's pay rule, there's less trials now. So back when I was cutting my teeth and starting off, Jake, you know, in the late 70s, early 80s, I tried a lot of jury trials. I probably averaged 3 jury trials a year. And now I average probably 1 every 5 or 6 years.
Wow.
Because pretty much the loser's pay rule is pretty sobering. If you got a client that's not a big gambler, I mean, I usually tell them, I said, this is going to be the biggest gamble you've ever made in your life. And going to trial is just like a football game. you know, everything could be going right, but one ruling by the judge, like one ruling by the umpire, maybe there's a touchdown for your team, and they call it back. Offsides. Offsides, that touchdown's called back. You don't get 7 points to lose the game.
Right.
Well, things like that, that courtroom, a judge sustains an objection, and all of a sudden a piece of evidence that I thought was really crucial, the jury doesn't hear. So there's all kind of, you know, arbitrary things that go on in a courtroom that no one can guess the outcome. You know, when I was a young lawyer, I used to think I could guess. And now with all the gray hair I got and all the experience, I don't have a clue. And I'm convinced about this. Just like a baseball game. Have you ever wondered about, like the other day FSU played Connecticut in baseball, in the Super Regionals, we won 24-4. The next night we played the same team, and we had to come from behind to beat them 10-8 in the 13th inning. So it just, same team, same coaches, maybe different pitchers, maybe a different call, maybe that long pop fly was a home run this time as opposed to not. There's so many different things that happen. The same is true of the courtroom. So trying to predict, you know, what a jury's going to say, and you don't know who these six people are. you know, and usually what happens is the jurors that speak up the most usually aren't picked. So it's the real quiet ones that really didn't give you much information, and they get chosen, and you don't know what they're thinking. And just never really know. I mean, you think you know, but you don't.
Right.
So, yeah, so going to court is like playing craps. In fact, I'll tell you a story. So I was trying another case, also in Santa Rosa County, and I wanted $75,000 on this guy. He had a shoulder injury. I think he had arthroscopic shoulder. So at that time, this back in the 90s, I probably want more money for it today. But back then, I wanted $75,000. They offered me $35,000. And we went to court. Well, it was one of those court cases where nobody was watching. Sometimes you get a lot of people who are just curious and want to watch a case or whatever, but the courtroom was empty except for, you know, the court personnel, the jurors, the judge, and the lawyers and stuff. But there was only one guy, and he was sitting in the back of the room very attentive. And I quickly figured out that he must be the insurance guy, that he was watching. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times the insurance companies send their insurance person in to watch the trial just to see what's going on.
Right.
So there was a break, and I was passing by him, and he kind of looked up at me like he wanted to talk to me. So I said, yeah, what's going on? I said, I presume you're the representative of the insurance company. He goes, yeah, I am. And I don't want to get really graphic, but I am Jewish, and I do have a large nose. This guy had a very large nose and looked Jewish. And we're looking at each other. I go, I said, are you Jewish? He goes, yeah, I'm Jewish. He was from Minnesota or someplace.
Mm-hmm.
And we just started hitting it off and talking. And he'd been watching the trial. And he goes, you know, I hear what you're saying. I get what you're saying. I hear your arguments. Would you take $100,000 to settle this case?
Mm.
And I tried to hide my jaw because, you know, we were, you know, at our last demand was 75. So I go to my client thinking the case is settled. I mean, I'm getting $100,000 without the jury making a decision. And my client goes, you know, if that guy's willing to offer $100 and he's been watching, must think what we're thinking, that everything's going our way. And I'm going to roll the dice. I think we're going to win this case. So the jury comes back. Ironically, it's funny because the jury doesn't know anything about negotiations. And this was just so crazy. The jury comes back at $55,000.
Oh.
So I'd wanted $75,000 there. I had split the middle perfectly, but they had no way. It was just flying. It just happened. But, you know, we don't have that offer of $100,000. So we really left $45,000 on the table. And the next day, I happened to fly out to Vegas. I had already had a pre-planned trip out there. So I'm at Vegas, I'm at the blackjack table, all by myself, I'm playing, and this lady says, how's it going here? And I said, well, I lost $45,000 yesterday. And she looked at me like, whoa.
Yeah.
But the point being is, it's going to court's legalized gambling. I've always felt that. It's a crapshoot because, if you try a case with 10 different juries, you're going to get 10 different results.
Right.
How much time do we got? I got one more example.
We've got about 8 minutes left.
Perfect.
All right.
Let me give you a true story that exemplifies this.
Okay.
So this wasn't my case. In fact, I'll tell you who it was. It was Fred Levin, who was a great trial lawyer from here, who died several years ago, but probably 10 or 15 years ago, he had a diver that embolized from the Gulf of Mexico, and he was taken to a local hospital, I believe Sacred Heart. And the whole argument was, did they treat him right away, bariatric chamber? Could they have done this? The guy ended up being like a quadriplegic, and there was a lot of testimony that had they treated him quicker and earlier, that maybe he wouldn't have been as bad. So that was the whole case. So they offer zero. He goes to trial, and the trial jury gives $7 million. $7 million for this poor guy that's a quadriplegic in a wheelchair. Well, the Sacred Heart appealed, and they basically said that Fred had an improper argument. You just can't, it's not like TV where you get to argue all this stuff. I look at all this stuff on TV, and it's TV, folks. You just can't sit there and talk about anything you want to. So I think Fred had said, like, the defense's tactics were ridiculous. And the Supreme Court said that's improper. We're taking away the verdict. Start all over again. Well, now they start all over again, except this time, I believe Sacred Heart came up with an expert witness, but pretty late, like real late in the day, they retained some other expert. And Fred cried foul, said, I don't have enough time to depose this guy. And the judge says, you can take his deposition a couple days before trial. That'll be good enough. So they end up going to trial, and that jury says zero. Same judge, same claimant, same lawyers, zero verdict.
Wow.
Fred appealed the verdict, saying, wait a second. They added an expert witness at the last minute. They sandbagged me. I really never got to properly do my research on this guy and cross-examine him fully. I wanted a new trial. The appellate court agreed with Fred. They said, okay, the zero verdict is thrown out. Go back a third time. And it still didn't settle. And the third time Fred tried it, guess what the verdict was?
What was it this time?
$22 million.
Ugh.
And it stuck. It was a clean case. And they probably appealed it. They didn't win the appeal. And they got hit for $22 million. So the moral of that story was, same lawyers, same judge, same injured person, different juries. $7 million, zero, $22 million. So I'm convinced if I tried the same case 10 weeks in a row, 10 different juries, I'm going to get 10 different verdicts, just like football games. You play the same team 10 times, you're going to get 10 different scores.
Right. I just keep thinking about the
same score every time.
Yeah, I keep thinking about the $100,000 you had in your hand from the insurance guy in that one case. I mean,
that's true, and I wanted to settle. Mm-hmm. And I play a lot of poker, and I believe that pigs get fat and hogs get slaughtered. So my client won the gamble. I advised him to take the $100,000 and run. And,
right.
He didn't.
You mentioned
how much time we have now.
We've got about 3.5 minutes. Real quick, you mentioned, how people see it on television. Do judges often throw out critical pieces of evidence like that in a trial?
They can be. I mean, whether it's criminal or civil, if they feel it's inadmissible, you saw a lot of that in the Donald Trump trial. They're going to appeal about that, about either allowing stuff in that shouldn't be allowed in.
Mm.
So I think on Donald Trump's trial, where they're going to appeal, the biggest appeal that they may be able to do is when they brought in the other ladies that he apparently had dilly-dallied with. That may have been improper. I mean, it should have been limited to the scope of the charge. So if there's a character assassination in Florida, we call it the Williams Rule. You're not allowed to put in a lot of other conduct that, you know, the person may have done to poison the jury on this particular claim.
Yeah.
So if you have a defendant, if I have a defendant in a lawsuit and he's caused five accidents, I can't let a jury know he's caused five other accidents. I'd like to. The judge is not going to let me do that.
Right.
We got to talk about this accident. So, you know, there are rules that limit cases and so forth. But real quickly, I had another case back in the 80s, and they offered me $10,000. I wanted $150 for a broken leg. Everything was going my way. In the middle of the case, they offered me $250. I was ready to settle for $250. I had my client. He goes, nope. I think it's going away. I don't want the $250. The judge came to me and said, Terry, I heard you were offered $250. You're still going forward. I go, it's my client's call, judge. It's not mine.
Right.
And that jury gave us $750. Got $750 on that verdict. So that client guessed it right, I guess.
But wow.
I'm glad we didn't take the $250.
Right. I've got a caller here. Let's see if I can pump them through real quick. Yep. Caller, are you on the line?
Hi, I'm calling for the Terrence Gross. Is he there?
Yes.
Okay. My question is, you said that you couldn't bring in past accident history. What about a past criminal history? If it was felonies, but it was more than 20 years ago, can they bring that information in? And I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Great. That would be up to the judge's discretion. What they're allowed to do in Florida, they are allowed to ask you, have you been convicted of a felony or a misdemeanor involving fraud or deceit? That's all you're allowed to ask. And if you've been convicted of one felony, you say yes, but they don't get into whether it's rape or drug dealing or whatever. But if so much time has gone by, it's called attenuation. If it's been so attenuated that it's 20 years ago, a judge may think that it's no longer relevant. And right. A judge says, you know, he's a convicted felon. That was 20 years ago.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Gross. We'll see you here next time. Thank you for everything. And go check them out at grossandschuster.com.